It is 6:30. I'm calling this meeting of the DEIA task force to order at 6:30 p.m. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Jason Benda.
Here.
Barb Bresner. John Farney.
Here.
Aquia Forku. Jacqueline Calipenny.
Here.
Donald Owen.
Here.
Cece Phillips. Kathleen Robbins.
Here.
Heather Rumpel.
Here.
Irene Weathersby. Here. Benjamin Beaupre.
Here.
Jamala Rogers.
Present. We have a quorum. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion to approve the agenda, Irene Weathersby.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And can I get a motion to approve the August 20th, 2024 minutes?
So moved.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I have one slip for public participation. Ms. Jenny Lee Benda. Press the button and it'll light up for you.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Hello, and thank you all for allowing me to address this committee. As a resident of Champaign County and an electronic accessibility advocate, I wanted to bring up the often overlooked topic of electronic accessibility, specifically the accessibility of county websites, job boards, and electronic documents. I know that this body is supposed to create an RFP and possibly create the rubric or considerations upon which those proposals will be judged. I would like you to consider electronic document and web accessibility when creating this rubric. For example, does this company have a website that is accessible for assistive technologies? Example, screen readers, magnification programs, etc. Does it have enough contrast for colorblind users? Is this type of accessibility something the company even thinks of? There are more things to consider, but my time to speak to you is limited. I realize that you are still in the information gathering stage, but I encourage you to take note of this for future consideration. I thank you again for your valuable time.
Thank you. Those are all the slips that I have. I don't see anyone else, so I will close public participation. Moving on to communications, do any members of the task force have communications to share? You do, Michelle? Oh. Go ahead, Jason.
The downside of sitting next to the chair. The chair doesn't look at me. We got problems. Boy, I feel like there's a lot that I'm going to say tonight, and much of it can go later in the agenda. I do want to make three statements. First, I should have done this last week. I want to thank Megan for clerking our meetings. I know it's her job, but I want to thank her anyway. Second, I want to present a scenario that I want this group to think about. Imagine a prospective employee. Let's call her Helen, because there's no Helens here. Helen has some neurodivergence that causes her to occasionally struggle with mundane tasks. And she's ambulatory, but she has some mobility difficulties. She has an appointment for an interview here at Brookins one morning for a job for which she's very qualified and for which she would be an asset to the county if she were hired. She's managed to bring herself together to get to this interview, which, with the lack of structure she's currently facing as an unemployed person, is no small feat. And she gets off the bus at Washington and Lenore in front of our building. As she walks from the bus stop to the driveway, she looks up and sees what? What do all of us see as we enter this building through the main entrance? a 175-foot sidewalk. She hasn't indicated any of her difficulties to her interviewer or sought any accommodations for fear of being discriminated against, because they wouldn't affect her ability to do her job once she gets here. But now she has to struggle just to reach the building, and her anxiety is increasing right before her interview. I want a consultant who thinks about Helen. I want a consultant who looks at our building, assuming we're still here, and says, I know you can't really do anything about it without moving, but even for somebody getting dropped off in front of the door, that's a long walk. And you may not attract applicants with certain mobility difficulties just because of that. I want this RFP to attract a consultant who looks at not just the letter of our procurement and hiring practices, but our physical environment, and who thinks about all the inclusion and accessibility we strive for. Now, I want to be somewhat cautious. We need to be careful when we say we want a consultant to say X, because that's not our job. Our job is to get the consultant in here, and the consultant makes the statements. I feel like recognizing a problem is something that I can expect a consultant to do. I do not want to say things that a consultant should say to us as recommendations. Our job is not making recommendations. There was some discussion at the last meeting. Clerk Hammonds brought up some of his experience at CSRS, that they have developed a diversity committee, and after he left, they had created a position of diversity officer. Board Chair Carter brought this up as well. Could we have this idea of a diversity officer for the county? These are recommendations. I don't think they're bad ones at all, but these are recommendations, and these aren't what we're saying. I think that idea of a diversity officer is a fine idea, and I think that it's something the board should consider, but it's something the board should consider after receiving the recommendations that whatever contractor we bring in comes up with. As I have said many times going through this process, we're on step two. That's step six. When I looked at some of the sample RFPs that we got, in particular when I looked at the one for the City of Federal Way, Washington, they have a diversity committee. So they're ahead of us in what they're doing. They have a diversity committee. They have a standing committee that meets every month. And actually what their RFP was asking for is someone to come in and join their committee. They're asking someone to come in and be a resource with them at their meetings. That's a very advanced idea. It might be something that a contractor we bring in would suggest, hey, you know, it would be good if you had somebody like talking to you every month and you had this a committee dealing with these resources every month. That's fine, but that's not for us to say this is what you should do.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any communications for the committee? Okay, moving on to new business. Michelle is coming up to discuss the sample RFPs.
I brought homework. I'm sorry. So all of this is in the digital folder, but I also just printed out copies because I was getting it ready. So I didn't print out all of those RFPs, obviously. Those are only digital. The other thing you all had asked for was our minority purchasing policies, and I looked through we have a couple different policies, and I basically found it listed in two, and listed is a generous term. So there's a reference to it once in our general county purchasing policy, and then our highway department has like a federal transit purchasing policy, which I'm sure was a requirement they had to do to get federal money. So I printed out the pieces of those policies that reference the minority inclusion, but the entire policy is digitally in the folder. But just for tonight, so you had this. Here are these. And then while Megan, who is wonderful, I think everyone is aware of that, was helping me do some research. We found this thing, and I don't know, JJ, if this was maybe before your time, actually. It was called the Champaign County Economic Development Policy Subcommittee, and it met in 2004.
That's actually before my time,
it?
Even.
Okay. So they only met like three or four times, their product was a resolution, which is in this packet that I'll hand out to you as well. And I included their minutes from their meetings, but they also came up with this 7-point economic development policy that covers a lot of things, including workforce development, economic development. It's actually quite detailed and quite interesting, and it might be something that we might want to just take a quick tangent on, maybe not tonight, like once you guys take a look at it, but it might be something we want to come back to and talk about, because I think some of the initial foundational work that we've been talking about, it already exists here and is already in a resolution that we could work off of. All right, that's all I have for right now. Any comments or questions? So I know you all had asked for RFPs, and I had tried to find ones from Illinois or other counties, and I just could not come up with really anything. I put out questions to a couple of like the association boards that I'm on. On one of them, I even found someone else who'd requested the same thing like 2 years ago and didn't get any responses. So what I pulled for you was what seemed like the most applicable examples for what we're talking about. So I hope that they were somewhat helpful.
Go ahead, Jacqueline.
You had said that it's in the folder, but I don't know how to access the folder or how to get into this folder for me to – I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I missed it. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Just 'cause I keep finding things and I just keep dumping them in there.
No worries. Thank you. 20
emails to keep track of. I'll resend that to you.
Jason, go ahead.
Since we're on sample RFPs from other entities information, I wanted to mention a few things about, in particular, that the one from Federal Way really struck me, probably because I have a very dear friend who lives in Federal Way. One of the things that struck me about that I haven't mentioned yet is they mention specifically in the document that we were shown how the document was disseminated. They didn't talk a lot about how they advertised the position, and I'm going to follow up with somebody later on that. When I look at our purchasing policy that we were handed last meeting, it says, advertisement shall be placed in legal notices section of a local newspaper of general circulation of the county for a minimum of 1 day in each of 3 successive weeks, and when appropriate, provide notice in related professional publications or websites. One of the things that struck me about the Federal Way one is they said, okay, this is how we disseminated this. On June 14th, we said, this is going into the city website. This is going to the Federal Way Mirror, which is Federal Way, for those of you who don't know, Federal Way is a south suburb of Seattle. It's in far southern King County in Washington. It was placed in their local paper in that suburb. It was placed in the Seattle Times, in the large metropolitan newspaper. It was placed digitally in the Puget Sound Business Journal, which fits under the related professional publications, but it's not something I would have come up with if I was trying to think what would we want to do, where would we want this information disseminated. And it was also presented to, it said, the Washington Office of Minority and Women's Business Enterprise or something like that, which sounds like a state agency that would be something akin to a sub-agency of DCEO here. The one other thing I know about this Federal Way proposal is it said in the proposal that it was going to be disseminated on June 14th. The deadline for submissions was July 12th, and they intended to award a contract on August 9th. They haven't awarded a contract yet, because they got 40 submissions. It is taking them longer than they anticipated to go through the submissions. They are down to the final five. They're going to be conducting interviews late next week. And their diversity committee is very much looking forward to having this join them, because they want to get along with the process just as we do here. I read that this morning. The community development manager emailed me this morning with that information, and I looked at that. I thought, that's wonderful. Boy, I hope we can write an RFP that gets 40 proposals to come in, even though that's going to be a major headache for the people who evaluate these and make decisions. But I think that's great. I am going to follow up with the other contact that he gave me this morning about how was this advertised, you know, in addition to what we see there. But that's information that I saw about this, particularly that Federal Way proposal, that I thought was interesting and wanted to share.
Thank you, Jason. Kathleen?
I found the Portland, Maine, Cumberland County, I believe, was very comprehensive. I was curious how other people found it. Is that what we wanted? Is that the end product of something what we're aiming for? What other people thought about it? I'm not sure I'm exactly clear on what we're aiming for, and I was wondering if that's what other people felt like it was.
Michelle, do you want to speak to that?
Well, I think the question of what are we aiming for is kind of the first thing you all need to define, and not necessarily that it needs to be, you know, down to the minutia, but I think we maybe need to agree on the broad strokes of what information we want back based on what issues are we trying to address. I think that's kind of the first thing for us to really figure out. I tried to pull RFPs with a variety of kind of focuses, but which I don't know, maybe that might muddy the waters a little bit, but I think that is kind of this question that's hanging over us, is what exactly are we trying to get at with the RFP? And the first thing we need to do is establish what that generally is. Yeah. I mean, there's the request from the board of what the purpose of this committee is. But I mean, it's not, you know, like there's not like a sanction for not doing that. So, but I mean, the board was clear as to what they were hoping would come back to them.
Does anyone else want to speak to that? No? Okay. I will move on to the employment data.
So this is a quick overview of the real basic demographic data that we currently collect and have reliable access to. We don't ask really anything beyond sex, age, race, EEO required data. So I don't know, that might be something we want to talk about in the RFP is, you know, do we need some guidance on what we should and should not be collecting? I don't know. But right now we're just fulfilling the federal requirement for the equal opportunity reporting.
I'm just curious because I like data. You said that this is part of the EEO reporting. Is this something that has changed drastically over time in terms of the racial demographic data of the employees?
I don't believe it has. I can, I'm not going to make any promises. I'll go back and look at previous EEO data, but I don't know what condition it's in. because they also keep changing how we report it to them. But I'll just maybe try to go back like 5, 10, 15 years and just try to spot pull it from random dates and see what kind of comparisons we get.
Yeah, and I'm to be clear, I'm not asking you to recreate something and mm-hmm. you know, magically pull stuff out or do a deep dive. I was just curious because, and I know the EEOC reports do change. The other thing that I was thinking about, and I know I missed the first meeting, and I apologize for that. I know that there was information and recommendations in the Racial Justice Task Force document that this board approved in 2017. And I was wondering if maybe you could drop that into the folder too, so that we could have everyone on this committee could have access to that document and the recommendations, because there was quite a bit of history there. There was quite a bit of research, and then there were some really strong recommendations about a variety of topics across the county that might inform us as we move forward.
Is there anyone else who wants to speak to this list or this data? Sorry. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, so while we're in information only on employment data, one thing that haven't been looking at and that I think we should be looking at, particularly since we're being concerned with hiring and not just who's already here, is the EEO reports on applicants. Every month there's an EEO report as part of the HR report that comes before the committee of the whole. In the last 12 months, so the 12 months ending August 31st, so the last 12 reports, we had a total of 1,089 total applicants, adding those reports together. 468 male, 600 female, 7 non-binary, 15 undisclosed for gender. Now, gender actually isn't part of our directive from the board. It's one area of diversity that isn't specified by the board, and I think part of that is because marginalized population with gender is considered to be non-male, and we don't have underrepresentation of that. Then the racial demographics that are broken out, again, this is EEO required data, so we just have gender and race and eventually get to veteran status. 57 Hispanic or Latino, 625 white, 265 black or African American, 2 Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, 35 Asian, 8 American Indian or Alaska Native, 93 two or more races, and 4 undisclosed. Now, I honestly look at that and I don't know if those numbers are unreasonable or not. Certain things stand out, like when I look at 27 total applicants in the highway department, 27 are white, 25 are male. I look at that and say, why? I don't know the answer, but it brings up a question. I look at Circuit Court, 88 total applicants, 72 female. Why? What's drawing that? What's causing that? And then on the other, flipping the gender around on that, information technology, 94 total applicants, 76 male. I wonder what's causing that. And you know, the racial information here, we don't have it, with the exception of highway, that one really stood out, but I didn't see anything that was just really glaring. Veteran status, though, 33 out of that 1089. And that includes 5 of the 15 applicants of Veterans Assistance Commission, which, if they're applying for superintendent, they have to be a veteran. So that definitely seems to be something that we don't have enough diversity in. But also, limited data. Michelle already mentioned that we have limited data. We don't have any of this. This is a CC-305. This is a form from the Department of Labor that is used for federal contractors or subcontractors that's a voluntary self-identification of disability. When I worked at Parkland, I had to fill out this form because they've educational institution receiving federal funding. I had to fill out this form. And I did not, at the time I worked at Parkland, identify myself as having a disability. I said no every time. And then I got my autism diagnosis and realized I should have been saying yes. I don't consider myself to have a disability, but if I fill out this form, I certainly do, because neurodivergence is listed right here. We don't ask for this data. We don't ask for LGBTQ data. We don't ask for data that we don't think is necessary, and I understand that. Sometimes we do ask for data that's not necessary. I had to, when I applied for my current position, I had to describe my education. I had to state the highest level of education attained. Do I need a master's degree to be a custodian in this building? No. Does it cause a problem for me being a custodian in this building? Also, no. I have a master's degree. Doesn't really matter. That's information that we do collect. We don't report it anywhere, at least not to my knowledge. But one of the problems we have is we don't collect information that allows us to really get a picture of diversity. I do want to talk about two other things while I'm looking at employment data, and they're things that I know happen in the hiring process because I've seen them. If I look at September's EEO report, so last September, September 2023, shows a position closed in September, closing date on it, actually had a closing date, and that's another issue I'll get to in a minute. Its closing date was September 7th. September's report lists two applicants, both white males. The September vacancies report that's also part of that HR report shows that that department, as of close of business September 30th, had zero vacancies. So the one that was being applied for looks like it was filled. Except I know, as of close of business September 30th, it wasn't filled. Because I know that the person who filled it didn't get offered the position until October 2nd. Now, I'm not saying that that department didn't know, hey, no, we filled this position. We're going to fill this position. But there's something strange with the reporting there. And there's something about these closing dates. And here's my other example that deals with that. December and January both show a position, shows no end date in December and shows a closing date in January. That position, if I go back and look at the posting, was actually posted on December 8th with a closing date of January 19th. The EEO report for December shows one applicant, a white female. The January report shows three applicants, a white female, a white male, and a black male. The position was filled by an internal candidate, a candidate working already working for the county, whose vacancy was posted on January 17th, that is 2 days before the original closing date. Who might be the white female on the December report is definitely not the white female on the January report. Further, the closing date was subsequently changed. On or before the 18th, that closing date suddenly became the 15th. I asked, what exactly does this closing date mean? And I got a response. And the response I got to what the closing date means is that this is the date that the ad would come down. And it describes that this is the end of the process and we're not going to accept more applications. But I look at that situation and say, well, you moved the closing date. To me, if I were an applicant, I would be looking at a closing date and saying, okay, well, that's the date that the applicant pool closes. And you're not going to look at the applicant pool until you get to the closing date. Because we have job postings here that say as soon as possible, that don't have a specific closing date. Now, I don't know if a consultant is going to look at that and say, you know, this is a problem because we have... You may have applicants who see that closing date and say, oh, well, I've got time. I've got time to do this. I can apply on this date. And then find out, no, we already made a hire because our closing date got pushed back later. These are things that are happening in our hiring process that I know are happening. And these are things that I want a consultant to see. I want a consultant to know what goes on in our hiring process in order to be able to make recommendations. Now, one thing I don't know is Michelle brought up in the past We have to decide what information we're going to put in our RFP. We have to decide what information we want to give to these consultants. One thing I don't know is this like court, where you really are only supposed to know what happened in court? You're only supposed to know what the prosecution presented and what the defense presented? Or is this a situation where they can receive their RFP and then do their own research? Because this EEO reports for applicants for the last 12 months, anybody could have done this because it's public information. It's not information that's at all secret or information that we would have, that we would have to present for them to be able to know about it. But I don't know if ethically they could do that.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay, so I can speak to a couple of those pieces. We're a government entity. Everything we do is online and open to the public. So I would hope that we don't get a proposal from anyone who does not go to our website and start digging through our county board meeting notes and like looking at these things, right? I think that's just appropriate due diligence for anyone that wants to apply for this. For this RFP, honestly, for any RFP we have, like, I think you'd want to go and make sure that we're not actually broke and not telling anybody and stuff like that, right? Like, you need to check some things out. So they absolutely can do that. They can also submit questions back to us. They could say, like, hey, item 4 is kind of vague. What are you saying? And we can answer. We have to post it with the RFP online because the information has to be shared with all of the potential people who are filing an RFP or filling the RFP with us. We can't give information just one and not the others. But we can answer whatever questions we want. We can decline to answer questions if we don't want to, or, you know, tell them you're on the wrong track, don't worry about that. You know, so we can have a dialogue with them. It just has to be open and equal and accessible to all of the people who want to apply for the RFP. In terms of the hiring process, There's a lot of things I could talk about there, but I think the thing that I want to focus on is what's important to remember is we don't now, as the HR department in the executive's office, and we never will in the future, control the hiring process for the other departments. That is not an option. And that is what we have to keep in mind. And that's why we wanted to do a committee, because it's really complicated and it's going to be frustrating and it's going to be difficult. We cannot say you can't look at applications until the closing date, or you can't, like, we can't do any of that. We can put together a whole bunch of best practices and training and support and education, but when it comes down to red letter law, we cannot give that to the other elected officials. That's just outside the bounds of the authority of the board. But in the other piece that you have, I'm honestly going to say the majority of that is because AppliTrack is the worst program ever invented, and it was probably written in 1975 and has never been updated. We are in the process of transitioning away from it and going to a system where the department and elected officials will have much more instant access to them being able to post a job. Right now, it's very much a, like, it's an email to a person, and then there's this, and then there's that, and it's a ridiculous process. Whereas in the new system, they should go in, say this job is open, post the position, it's posted, they monitor who's coming in, they decide when they want to take it down. A lot of our positions have some union requirements on how long or when or where they have to be posted that have to be abided by. So there's a lot of different moving parts in there. It's definitely not a cohesive, efficient system right now. But we are, I think, trying to tackle the biggest problem, which is the use of AppliTrack. And we're actually doing that through a full-on Munis integration. So all of our HR would be in Munis. So the job posting, the application, and then once the person gets hired, they're already in Munis because they came in as an applicant. So I've got pretty big hopes for that taking out a good percentage of the frustration and the confusion around just the technical aspects of how we handle job postings, so that we can also then focus on these pieces, which are much more harder and less tangible, of how do we make sure we have good promotion? How do we have diverse candidates? How do we help department heads sort through lots of candidates? That kind of thing. I just had a department come in today and we're like, take it down. We've had 15 applicants. We can't get through all of these. Like, just take it down because we're getting overwhelmed. That's a great problem to have. I would love for all of our department heads to have to tell me that. That doesn't happen very often. So, you know.
Okay. Is it?
Yes.
Okay. to piggyback off of you too, in coming from a department where one of the many FOP, we have a detention center, and so you were talking about male and female applicants. We have to have so many males and so many females. And so that is part of, I mean, our female side out there has been okay, but our male side, I mean, we have struggled to have a full staff of males, and so that's the target. And you may see a lot of males applied for there. That's because that is the target area that we need, because we can't stay fully staffed there. So that is something we have to think about when we're looking at some of that data. I know that the correction center is probably the same way. I mean, there's certain union rules, and then there are certain jobs that are specifically have to be a male or a female, and our turnover just happens to be on the male side at that particular facility and within our department. So something to think about there too.
Jacqueline.
I think my biggest concern as it relates to being a part of this task force, as I'm looking at this data as it relates to the county's employees, if we're looking at creating RFPs for organizations and companies and things like that, what I'm seeing from the data is that there's a culture in this organization to hire white people. And I'm not saying that maybe black people aren't applying for the jobs, but the numbers are bad to me. You know, as a black woman who lives in this county, to see that 83% of the people who work in the county are white, regardless if you're a man or not, that doesn't make me feel like, oh, let me apply for a job at the county. You know what I'm saying? And I think that is an issue with the culture of the organization. So regardless of how HR is handling the situation as it relates to departments, from a cultural perspective, from an organization perspective, every single one of your departments are hiring white people. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, and that's clear in your data. And so that's an issue with the culture inside of the organization. And so I think that would be something that needs to be addressed as well, as we are talking about how can we make it more diverse? How can we create a more diverse RFP? If I was a black business and I see this data as it relates just to your staff, that doesn't make me think that I can even get an RFP from this organization, because you're not even hiring people who look like me, right? And so, like, what we're saying is we want more minority organizations to apply for, you know, job that we're creating, like business, like we want you to apply for, you know, whatever we're doing, you know, cement production or whatever, right? But we're not even hiring black people, you know? So how can we ask minority organizations to, you know, apply for RFPs if we're not even hiring minorities, right? I mean, 83% is a large number, right? And I mean, 15%, that's wild. When we think about what the county numbers are, right? In Champaign County, how many people are minority, right? And how many people live in this? Like, the organization as a whole doesn't even represent the county that we live in, right? And so I think when we're thinking about the task force as a whole and the organization as a whole, I think that is also something that we need to, like, take into consideration on why people aren't applying for, you know, RFPs, or why maybe people might think they're not receiving RFPs if they do apply for them, right? And so I think it's a cultural organization problem, and not just like, oh, we didn't know it was happening. I think this is why I really wanted these numbers, because I wanted to understand, why wouldn't somebody, like, you know, apply for an RFP for the county? But when I'm looking at your employee numbers, that would make me not want to apply either, because it just makes you feel like you're not even welcomed in that space. And I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong. I think it's just like systemic, right? And so it's something that's been happening for so long that people probably just missed it. And a lot of times we hire people who look like us or feel like us or relate to us. And if 83% of the staff at the county are white, and those are the people who are hiring other people, I'm going to hire somebody who looks like me too, right? And so, like, I think we need to figure out how we can transition the way the county is hiring its own employees for people to feel comfortable to apply for even an RFP. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that it, you know, kicks off a lot of, you know, this is very baseline data because I am not an Excel expert and also not a data expert. And I think that kind of is the first thing because I have a lot of questions of like, what does longevity look like breakdown by race? What does level of supervisory responsibility and management look like broken down by race? You know, like if we look at our retirees, what's that look like broken down by race? What does pay rates look like broken down by race? You know, we have union positions, but there's flexibility within those as to pay rates. Like, so if we had like a true data analysis of those kinds of benchmarks, you know, maybe we're thinking about this a little too big, and maybe that's really the first RFP, right? Is like a data analysis to come in and pull all this EEO data, our applicant data, our employee data, our longevity, our pay rates, all of that stuff, and give us a database picture of what we are actually having happen here. Because I think we also need to break this down by department. Because if you walk around the county, you see different things in different departments. And not just what it looks like right now, but what has it looked like for the last 5 years, 10 years, 15 years in that department. You know, that level of breakdown also compared to what are promotions look like over, you know, a time period in specific departments and things like that. So, you know, maybe we're making this a little bit harder for ourselves by trying to think of all of the things when really what we need right now is an RFP that is like, here's all of our questions that we want you to go get the data to answer or to analyze the data to answer so that, that from that, then we can go back to another RFP and say, okay, this is what we know our county government employment looks like based on the data. Now, how do we address these pieces? But I think that even if we brought in a company to tell us, like, how are we more diverse? What does that mean? Like, they don't even know what our obstacles are right now. They don't know why we're not diverse. And data is really the way for us to, like, answer that question to get started.
Sam and then Don.
There we go. Thank you. I've been a part of the Highway Committee for 3 years now, and these were some of my posing questions. Why are we not doing business with minority contractors? Some of the answers that I've gotten is, well, they're not here locally or no one's applying. So I do want to piggyback off of Mr. Brenda and Mrs. Calapini because we do have some issues here. Some people are getting the information, some people are not. And I think that shows in our data. So I think, you know, our position here on this task force, it's many layers to this. I think our county also needs some education as far as how to deal with or how to not deal with, but how to work with other people that are not of the white race. We are so diverse in our community. Our county government should show that, and the data should also show that. So I'm definitely looking forward to the progress that we'll make as a task force, but there are a lot of different layers to this where I think we need some education, and then we also need to seek those minority contractors and businesses that we can do business with that will show that we are trying to make this government more diverse. Thank you.
Don.
Thank you. I want to echo what Board Chair Carter and Jacqueline said, and maybe put a little bit of an added spin on it, because I think one of the things that you said, Jacqueline, that I think is really critical is who's doing the hiring, right? And one of the frustrations that I've had as a member of county board, that I was not prepared to be this big a frustration, was the fact that each of these independently elected officials gets to do whatever they want. They don't have to follow any rules that the county board sets out. They don't have to attend trainings that we want to send them to. And I would agree with Board Chair Carter. Yes, this county at every level needs a lot of anti-racism training. And I'm not going to call it DEI training because that's weak. It has to be anti-racism training. And then that being said, just because I've had this argument for years with in other lives and other organizations and other other spaces in my life, for me, it's not good enough to say that we want the employees of the county to represent the population of the county. And let me tell you why. The census from 2020, which was finalized in 2022, said that we are 65% white. We are 11% Asian. We are 14% black. And we are 7% Latino. And then a fraction, approximately 3%, is multiracial, non-Hispanic. My point to saying that is that we need to look at who we serve. And we know that people feel more comfortable coming in and talking to people who look like them. People feel more comfortable when they say, oh, this person I can relate to. And I'm saying that very much understanding what I look like. And that's something that, yep, we have to let that go. Those of us that look like me have to let that go and say, yeah, we need to be serving the people, because our job as elected officials, as members of this county, we need to serve the people. And by serving the people, it means we need to do everything we can to make the people feel welcome in our county building. And so I don't really know where I was going with that, but I do want to just say, yeah, that I think I wanted to highlight Jacqueline's point of it's all about who's doing the hiring. And when I say that, I don't mean that we want to have, you know, just a black woman solely doing all the hiring, but it has to be a diverse committee. I saw that in one organization I worked for where every hire turned out to be a white woman. Why? Because 95% of the people in that building were white women, and so you got white women. And so it's like, nope, we're going to bring someone from this building over, and they're going to sit on the committee because they're not a white woman. And we have to do that, but again, Michelle said this. I've banged my head against the wall a few times about this. What do we do with the elected officials who don't have to follow our rules when it comes to DEI?
Well, I have not a suggestion, but I think that we also something to keep in mind is you all are here because you care about this issue, and you know that it's an issue. If this is the starting line, you are down there. We have people making hiring decisions that are not at the starting line, right? So, you know, which is why I keep falling back on the data, because I think to get started, we need to show, I know that we know, but we need to show this is what the problem looks like, and that we know it's a problem and we know it exists because the data is telling us it exists. You, over the last 2 years, you've had 150 applicants, you know, half of them not white, and every single time you've hired a white person. That's statistically impossible. Like, you did not do that randomly, right? Like, we need to get to, like, that level of, you know, and we can do it in a way of, like, we're not, you know, trying to cancel anyone, but we're trying to say, like, let's work on this. There's room for improvement here. And we have some tools. We have some resources. We have some training. We have some things. We could set up a committee. It could be voluntary. You know, but if a department head wants to, you know, use a committee as the first round to go through their applicants, pull out, you know, the qualified diverse pool of people for them to then narrow from at that point, that's a proposal that we could make and we could work on building. And I think there's quite a few department heads that would be pretty interested in a concept like that, as long as, you know, they aren't going to just be given somebody to hire, but they know that, like, a thoughtful group of people looked at all the applicants and really tried to pull out the best for their office as to who could that be, and that's who they are suggesting they look at. I think that's a very reasonable recommendation that we could make. But I do think, you know, for part of our problem, we need to articulate the problem first. And, you know, I know that we look at this really quick couple of sheets and can see problem. There's a problem. But that's not going to be everybody.
Yeah. Jason?
I think a lot of us have experienced the frustration of how siloed things are in this county. I mean, you take one look at the county board's website and the county clerk's website. They look like they were designed by completely different people for completely different purposes that have no relationship to one another, because they were, or at least by people who think that. I do think that while Michelle is right saying that, you know, the county can't dictate to the electeds, this is what you need to do in hiring, what my hope is out of this process is that recommendations come in from somebody who isn't sitting here and somebody who isn't under the county that says, you know, y'all need to look at this and y'all need to follow these practices, because I do think that administrative services can talk about best practices, or the clerk and recorder can talk about best practices, and it doesn't mean everybody's going to listen. I think there's a better chance that somebody from the outside, and that's really the point of what we were charged to do, I think it's going to be better if somebody from the outside comes in with these recommendations and says, no, look, this is really what you should do. And you're absolutely right that the electeds could take it and put it in the shredder. But that's, you know, we can hope they don't do that, and we can hope that if they do that, then they don't get reelected. But that's not our problem. Our problem is getting the information to them and hoping that there's some success. And one other thing I want to say in response to Mr. Owen's comment that, you know, he wants to talk about anti-racism training rather than DEI training. Good, because that's not what DEI is. DEI covers, and our task force is not just DEI, it's DEIA. It includes accessibility also. That covers a lot more ground than racial issues. But yes, that's important. That's low-hanging fruit in the sense that it's easily observable by us and by society writ large, more easily observable than some of the other things we're dealing with, like disability or LGBTQ. We could have a workforce that's 40% self-identified LGBTQ, 40% veterans, 60% persons with disabilities, 10% each of ethnic Irish, Italians, Russians, Turks, Greeks, Swedes, Koreans, Japanese, First Nations, and Filipinos. And that sounds great. Hey, we've got this ethnically diverse workforce. We've got all these different things that sound great. And anybody could walk in and say, you have utterly failed at your diversity goals because your workforce is 60% white and 0% black. And they'd be right. We would have failed. Absolutely. We absolutely need to address race. We just need to make sure that we also address other things. And so I like the comment about, you know, DEIA. I don't want to call it that when we're specifically talking about race. It's good. We need to talk about that. We need to address that. That's a big problem. Everybody in this room knows that's a big problem. We got to make sure we look at the other demographics also.
I just want to address, I'm an elected official for the Village of Rantoul. I sit on the board for the last 4 years. We address issues within the Village of Rantoul, specifically about racial disparity. However, you have to go before the citizens within the Village of Rantoul and also all the department heads to be able to present changes. Collectively, the board has to approve that. You're going against so many tiers of decision makers. As an elected official for the last 4 years, I got the mayor in my ear, the administrator of Rantoul in my ear, and the other board, the board of trustees in my ear when there's a critical piece to vote on. That's what we're up against. We can sit here all day long and have dialogue, but you're going against a power of structure. And in that power of structure, you got the mayors, the administrators, And they're the ones that make the decisions for the Champaign County. And unfortunately, that's what you're working against. You have to bring those departments in, and the administrator, and the mayors, to be able to present and propose changes. Otherwise, we will sit here and talk and talk and talk, and nothing's going to get done. I come from experience in getting things done. So with that said, if we're talking specifically about RFPs and be able to attract minority businesses to be able to secure a primary contract, do you know that I sat on the board, the president of the Peoria Black Chamber of Commerce for 3 years in an appointed position. Do you know how difficult it is for a minority contractor to be prepared to take on few million dollars of funding streams? They got to go get insurance. They can't afford the insurance. They've got to have staff. They can't afford the staff. They got to have workers' comp. So many pieces are so fragmented within the minority business population that those are the men and women that are in business to be able to secure funding streams from an RFP and be successful at it. Right now, you probably don't have any minority to be able to apply for anything of that level unless you take them and handhold them and help them overcome those barriers. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Period. I say this to say, you know, I sat on the governor's board for the executive board for African American across the whole state of Illinois under former Governor Pat Quinn. 11 members throughout the whole state were trying to get more black folks hired in the state of Illinois. There's 200 and something counties in the state. We all represented certain counties. You know how difficult that was to make it happen? We're advisory committee to talk to the governor, the lieutenant governor, to make things happen. You're going to have to lobby within your own county. And they're going to have to hear your voice, and they're going to have to care. Stephen Summers, they're going to have to care. Right now, they don't care. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a committee comprised of this to know that there is a problem, systemically a problem in America, in Champaign County. How's it going to change? You got to go back and get folks that have created systemic structures and help them change it. Otherwise, we're going to fight and not get anywhere. Now, I pray that we're able to soften the hearts of others so they can come to the table, the ones that can make the decisions. Mm-hmm. They are not here. Mm-hmm. They're home. They're golfing. I work for them, and I represent them. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, Samantha.
Yep, sure did. I just had a question for Michelle. Was there any report that the board didn't receive pertaining to hiring practices with the Barry Dunn report?
Barry Dunn or the Gallagher workforce study?
It was the Gallagher. Okay. Yep, I got that mixed up.
I don't think that they looked into hiring practices. I can go back and look again. Yeah, I think that they just studied like our current staffing and did the focus groups with our current staff. I don't know if they talked about hiring in that either.
So under our former executive, it was said that there were some pieces that was not presented to the board. Is that correct?
Under her, that was my understanding. When I came into my position at the beginning of last year, I sent the entire report out to all the board members at that time. I can resend it. Would you like it again?
Could you please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll put it in the folder so everyone can see it.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. I do want to make sure that we include something about people with a disability and seeing how accessible the county is to people with different disabilities. I think Jenny Lee's point earlier about the website, and if people with disabilities have a hard time applying for jobs, I would like to know some information about that, if that's possible. I don't know. Or how many people with disabilities actually apply for jobs at the county, what issues they're having, how many people with disabilities actually work for the county. I think that'd be important as well. And then what struggles they have, and if the county is actually meeting those issues. Barb?
Sure.
It's on.
Okay. There we go. In this county, we've been doing a disability resource expo for the last 17 years, I think. Well, 2007, however that is. We have, as a steering committee that develops that, we have worked hard over the years to make sure that our event is very accessible and that our website is as well. So there may be some things on our website that you could, you know, that would be helpful. I don't know what the RFPs look like, but that might be an area to look at with the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Board's RFPs. It's, you know, I would love to see some numbers. I really would. I know we can't just come out and ask, but I like the act, you know, that there is a voluntary form that could, you know, is it being given to people? Is it on the website? I don't know, but because I think a lot of people are willing to give that information to make things better, you know, to they want to work. People with disabilities want to work. They want to be like everyone else. I mean, I know I can go back to 1970. Yes, I'm very old. But 1970 when I was hired by the state, DCFS. And, I mean, that changed my life. I, at that time, I think there must have been something coming through the saying, you know, the state needs to be better at hiring people with disabilities, because there were several of us hired all at once. I don't care. That was good. That was good. That made a total difference in my life. It gave me a career that's lasted 40, you know, long time, okay? So I just think we do have to, and I, you know, you were talking about the physical of the building itself even. I can tell you every time I go to the restroom in here and I get sprayed in the face trying to wash my hands, you know, it's antiquated. It's just like, you know, but nothing changes. It's been that way for years. So, you know, I would really like to see us, you know, have a strong focus on accessibility.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay, how about a proposal? So, one, Jason, if you want to give me that form, and I will check in and see. I want to just clear it with our state's attorney and just see if we can start voluntarily asking people to fill it out. And then I think we could also put together an anonymous online version for our current employees who want to submit information, because I think a lot of people want their identity known and acknowledged. So I agree. I think a lot of people would voluntarily do the form. So I'll look into that, and I'll look into also just incorporating it into our onboarding practice going forward so we can start collecting better data. I just want to make sure that we're not going to step on any legal toes with that. And then it sounds like we're kind of going in two directions. Data for what we are and how we got here, and just overall accessibility for getting into the county as an employee. And I think to get those both done well, that's two different companies and two different RFPs, which I don't think is a bad thing. You know, I think that's fine. So what if I start a document that I'll put in the folder and I'll reshare everything with everyone, and we can start, you know, just brainstorming on them. What are the things we want answered in those two endeavors? From a data perspective, what is the information we want? And from an accessibility perspective, whose perspective are we asking for in terms of what does accessibility look like on our current system, on our website, on our application form, on our, you know, ideally I'm going to say the new building because I don't think we should waste any time or money evaluating this building because we know what the status of this building is. But we also have other buildings. We have the courthouse, we have animal control, we have, you know, other places that the public go to and that employees go to as well. So we should also have those evaluated as well. So how does that sound for like kind of like a next step at this point? Okay.
If no one has anything else, then we'll move on to bidding process for minority applicants. Like some people have touched on that, but you go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you can see, I think I handed out a total of 4 pages, and they're not even like completely about minority vendors of any capacity. So I know we had talked last time about for this topic, bringing in some experts to talk about existing procedures and processes that work. I kind of feel like we probably need to hear that at this piece to figure out. And I also think this is probably one area where we don't need to invent anything. We just need to find the right person who already has the system that works well for a government and adopt it for what we need. So I know that Mr. Ivory was someone that was mentioned. I've got Ms. Joy from the city of Champaign, because I know they've doing a lot of work with minority vendors. Is there anyone else that somebody can think of, or any disability focused vendors?
I know that Shauna Claiborne, she works at CSRS now, but she did help the city create their CDAP program. And so she is their DI expert at CSRS at this point, but I think she would be a great person as well to reach out to, being that the city reached out to her to help them with their CDAP program.
And do you have a relationship with her?
I do, actually.
Do you want to just give her a heads up?
I can.
And then I'll follow up with like a formal request for her to?
I can definitely do that.
Okay. Go ahead, Benjamin.
Would it be possible to bring in the civil guy from the state's attorney's office to talk about what's still legal for us to even do anymore with the latest Supreme Court rulings, kind of making it impossible to even make use of the data we do find if we can't actually hire a black person to do HR because it would make it more diverse? It seems like we're a lot more limited since we're so far behind the curve on this DEI stuff. I mean, we're like 30 years behind.
Are you talking about like the decisions around affirmative action and how those are impacting what entities can do? I just want to make sure I understand what your question is.
Yeah, pretty much anything that involves race. I mean, I think we're still good on accessibility concerns, but anything involving race, it seems like that's a losing battle in the court. So how do we still take action that's meaningful and do it, but without, you know, just getting into endless lawsuits with, you know, far right, you know, organizations that, you know, obliterate us in the courts?
Okay. I will. So next month, I think we'll do the minority vendor stuff, if that's okay with everybody. And then the month after that, we'll loop back around to what does the current legal landscape mean for what we're trying to do. And in the meantime, we can be digitally working on and talking about at the meetings the two different types of RFPs and the questions that we want to ask in those different setups. Okay. I don't see any discussion.
That sounds good to me. Does everyone want to give a thumbs up? Okay. I think we've covered next steps. Okay. So moving on to other business, Megan gave me a sticky note with dates for a possible next meeting. So if we could take like consensus, we have Tuesday, October 22nd, Monday, October 28th, or Wednesday, October 30th. Anyone have preferences, or those dates don't work for someone? Monday the 28th or Wednesday the 30th?
Both of those days work for me.
Yes. Does the 28th work for majority of people?
Could we get the 28th and or the 30th? So when I go to the speakers, I could, in case they, you know, aren't available for one, I could try the other. Do both work for generally everyone? Not that we'll make you meet twice, but.
I'm assuming it works for me. I don't. Okay. It's not a Tuesday or Thursday, so I don't have a board meeting. Okay. Yep. That sounds good. And then Megan will send out an email confirming the date for everyone.
And I'll give Megan the link to the folder that I keep talking about. So every time she emails you, it'll be in the email. So it's easier to keep track of that link for you all. Yeah.
Okay. I do not have a chair's report. Is there any other business?
I just have a question for Michelle. To contact Mr. Larry Ivory's assistant.
I hadn't because we didn't have any dates in mind yet, but that's what I'm going to do tomorrow with the 28th and the 30th. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to use your name. Don't worry. Like, I don't know. Irene said you were going to be there. Like, it just is what it is. It's at 6:30. We'll see you then.
Seeing no other business, I adjourn this meeting at 7:41 p.m. Thank you, everyone, for your time and a productive meeting. Thank you.